Read the right thing. A great text. Here's a good example. Are we on, Brian? A good example of needing a bigger context. We don't have time to plow through all of this, but first of all, where are question? Joshua, that was in the bulletin? Are you sure you didn't skip? We skipped Reformation, I thought. I'd have to look, but. Yeah, am I wrong? They're wrong in the CPH thing.
Luke should be over here. They flip flop these two. This is the 3-year series. They messed up.
Well, now I'm confused because we did this one for Concordia. I happen to have this assigned to me for homiletical helps in the Concordia Journal, and I don't know if they were following, doing something else or what. Yeah, right. It gets confusing. Well, look, let's do Joshua 24 because that's what I looked at. If you're going to preach on something else, fine. This is a text that comes up sooner or later anyway. So here you have it. And I don't know what was advertised for the gospel now. Now you got me confused. So, sorry. First of all, we have the bigger context of Joshua, remembering that this now really is sort of the conclusion to the Pentateuch. Isagogically, there's arguments over whether we have a Pentateuch, a Tetrateuch, or a Hexateuch. And while the Pentateuch is the standard designation, frankly, this grew out of source criticism that the same supposed J, E, and especially P, not so much D in the Pentateuch, until you get to Deuteronomy, sources were then tracked also into Joshua, and this is where the sort of Hexateuch theory came from. Apart from that, one still has to recognize that Joshua is significant in being a transitional book, that it just as much begins the next section of Holy History as it does concludes the whole Pentateuchal promise, because the promise to the patriarchs is to inherit the land. And it really isn't until Joshua that you inherit the land. Now, you're still sort of on the edge, but on the other side of the river when you get to the end of Deuteronomy. And of course, here we are at the end of the book of Joshua. So it's kind of the end of the end, if you will. And you need to recapitulate the whole history here, and that's the setting of Joshua 24. By the way, there's a similar meeting and a similar speech by Joshua, really, in chapter 23. But there it's not addressed to all Israel. I think 23 was kind of the staff meeting of the leaders, and now in chapter 24, they become the sort of sit in the front rows kind of guys, but he's really addressing all Israel in 24. And it's kind of not just a pep talk, but a culmination and conclusion to all that has gone before. Here he gathers them at Shechem. Remember when they came into the land, they first did kind of a quick sweep and then gathered at Shechem, chapter 8. And this was sort of a central sanctuary gathering place for celebrating the fact that they were now in the land. All right, let's translate. Verse 1. V'yasof Yehoshua and Joseph Asaph, that is to gather together, brought together, eth kol shivtei Yisrael, all the tribes of Israel, Shechema, hey directive, toward Shechem. And Yikra, and he called out to the Ziknei of Israel, the elders, and to its Israel's Roshes, head guys, chiefs, and to the Shofates, to the judges, and to the Shoters. No one's really sure. You know, it'd be great if we had kind of a glossary of social terms, social, administrative, bureaucratic, hierarchical terms, but we don't. If these are tribal leaders or whatever, administrators, and Yithyatzavu, they gathered themselves, nice hithpael, Lifnei Ha'Elohim, before the God. God with a capital G. Two, V'yomer Yehoshua El Kol Ha'am. Here you have Joshua spoke to all the Am. Ko Amar Yahweh Elohe Yisrael. You can sight read this, right? Thus said Yahweh, God of Israel, B'Aver HaNahar, in, over the river. All right, this is a technical term, in, across the river. Who? Now who are we talking about? Yashavu Avothekem, your fathers Yashavd Me'olam. All right, who's he talking about here? Well, he goes on to define, if you haven't caught on, he's talking about the patriarchs. And across the river here is really a technical term for, what's the river? Do you know this code? Ha-Nahar is essentially the Euphrates. The Euphrates. So we're talking about Mesopotamia here, or even Haran, northern, what became Assyria. They dwelt and across the river, your fathers from of old. Terah, Avi Avraham, father of, remember Av takes this extra hirik yod in the construct, father of Abraham, and Avi Nahor, and father of Nahor, and Ya'avdu Elohim Achirim, and they avaded, served God's other ones. Elohim Achirim. Okay? Remember, they were not born Yahwists. Huh? They were adult converts. Three. Now, at this point, the lectionary, whether we're doing the right lesson or not, whether it is wise or not, skips. And if you're going to preach on this text, I mean, this is was my other point at the beginning. It's a classic example where you really can't skip these verses. All right. We have time to read all through them, but it picks up in verse 14. Look at verse 14. This is where the lectionary picks it up. Va'ata, and now. Well, now implies that we've gotten to then, see? And what's happened here? Again, we can't read through this, but I'll summarize for you. Essentially, Moses recapitulates the whole history of the Exodus, which is really tied to the patriarchal promises of the land. And the problem, of course, in Egypt wasn't just that they were slaves, but they were in the wrong land. God had promised them the land of Canaan, and not only were they in slavery, but they weren't in the land. But now this is solved, and you see that's the point of the book of Joshua, kind of bringing all of these themes to conclusion. But unless you realize that this is all started with God's fulfillment of his promise, of God's action in saving and redeeming his people, and he goes through how God did this, and he destroyed the Canaanite, and blah, 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 and he got all of that in there. Then you finally get to verse 14, and now, Yiru es Yahweh, imperative of Yare to fear, kal imperative, fear Yahweh, and ivdu otho, and avad him, serve, i.e. worship. Remember, those are two similar concepts. And serve him batamim u be'emeth. In tamim really is an odd, I think this is just a noun in sort of an odd form, looks like a plural, that means constancy. Tamim really has this sense of ongoing. So we would say in constancy, and in emeth you probably know is the word for faithfulness, truth, veracity, some abstract word you probably have to try to nail down for people. In constancy and in faithfulness. And ha-siru, hifil imperative from sur, cause to go away the gods, asher avdu avothekem, the gods which your father served in Aver HaNahar, in across the river. And b'mitzrayim, and if doeth Yahweh, serve Yahweh. Okay. Now what's interesting is that it certainly implies that amongst the people there were still those who were serving the gods of their fathers in across the river or the gods of Egypt. All right? It's not like they went out from Egypt now so wholly sanctified that temptations to serve other gods had disappeared. Hardly. 15. Ve'im ra be'enekem. But if it's ra in your eyes. Huh? Kind of a strong word to use here. Ra means evil, bad. But if bad in your eyes, la'avoth eth Yahweh, to serve Yahweh, bachru lachem hayom. Bachru, kal, imperative. Choose, lachem, for yourselves, I suppose, for you, hayom, today. Hayom, idiom for today. Eth me, look how easily they make an accusative out of me. Who becomes whom when you put an eth in front of it? Whom ta'avodun, with nun energicum, you will avad. Im, eth Elohim, asher avdu avothekem, if the gods which your fathers avaded, your fathers asher ba'ever hanahar, now you know that, the gods, or the fathers, your fathers, who were in across the river, va'im, and, or, if the Elohe ha'amari, the gods of the Amorite, who you are yashaving in their land, the Amorite, it's interesting that that's technically singular, the Amorite people, who you are living in their land, in whose land you are yashaving. Now, this is a famous line, right? I mean, everybody knows Joshua 24:15. Va'anoki ubethi, but I and my beth na'avoz, we will avaz eth Yahweh. Got it? All right. By the way, what's the choice here? Is the choice Yahweh or some other god? Right. Right. The choice is not whether you serve Yahweh or not. That's a given. The choice is, if it's Ra to serve Yahweh, to which the obvious answer would be, well, this is stupid even to entertain the thought, right? But okay, if you don't want to serve Yahweh, then choose who you want to serve. Because at this point, it doesn't make a bit of difference. You can choose false god A, the gods which your fathers served across the river, or false god B, the god of the Amorite in whose land you were dwelling, or whatever else you want to pick, right? Now, how many sermons have you heard where the choice is between Yahweh and the other gods, right? But that's not what it says. This has always bothered me, especially where Lutherans are nervous about, quote, decision-choosing theology anyway. Here they actually bring it into a text where it isn't there. Huh? It's not Yahweh or the other gods. The choice is which of the other gods you want. And that's the point. In fact, that was kind of the sermon theme I came to in the Concordia Journal thing. I played with the idea when a choice is not a choice at all. I mean, this should be a no-brainer, right? Serve Yahweh. Yeah, of course. And see, that's again that's why you have to read the intervening verses. After all God has done for you, He's fulfilled His promise, He brought you into the land, He's redeemed you by grace, He's brought you out of Egypt, recite the whole holy history, say the Apostles' Creed 3 times, now, serve Yahweh. And people would say, well, yeah, it's self-evident. Ought to be. See? Similar, they said something like this at Sinai, too. You know, all that Yahweh has spoken, we will do. Right. It never seems to work out that way. Now, in some defense of the choose Yahweh theory, you do have to take into consideration that in verse 22, it does say, and Joshua said to the people, witnesses you are, bakem, against yourselves, because Atem bachartem. You guys have bachard for yourself eth Yahweh to serve him. All right? But it's interesting that he only calls this something you have chosen after they've sort of confessed their faith. See? And I think this is precisely how, if I could say this without being misunderstood, a proper understanding of choosing or decisions theology happens. That you sort of wake up one morning and discover you're in love. Right? I mean, that's always the analogy I use in Bible class. It's sort of like falling in love. You don't sort of calculate, okay, on my agenda this week is, you know, finish my term paper, get ready for the end of the quarter, go out Friday night, sometime before the week's over, I'm going to fall in love and get married. And now let's consciously weigh the evidence, pick three or four girls, and make a choice here. See? What happens is it's a much more passive thing, and one morning you wake up and, see? And God comes to us in baptism. We're Christians. We grow with that understanding. And in some ways, we wake up and it's crystal clear. Some mornings, we wake up, we're not so sure about this whole business. But the relationship is established before we recognize it happening. And I think this text is kind of implying that. Well, let's go on. We left off at verse 16. 16. And the people answered and said, now look at their response. They don't say, we choose Yahweh. They say, Chalila. Now, this is an interjection. You probably put this in your vocabulary of, if you read that as a vowel, it's a four-letter word, I guess. Chalila. Chalal means to profane something. This is probably some, could be even a nasty word, but generally translated, no way. No way for us. Me azov from forsaking Yahweh. Okay? Which again implies that they are already in a relationship with Yahweh. They are not choosing Yahweh to initiate the connection, right? They're saying, no way for us from forsaking Yahweh to serve Elohim Acherim, ki Yahweh Eloheinu, hu ha ma'aleh othanu. Because Yahweh, our God, he is, or you could put a verb in the first half, Yahweh is our God, he is the ma'ale guy, hifil participle, the causing us to go up one, the one who brings us up and also our fathers from the land of Egypt. Interesting, fathers now here is probably a little nearer term than the forefathers from across the river, but hey, it's all the same bunch. From the land of Egypt, Mabeth of Adim. Again, these are almost stock phrases. You've read Deuteronomy 5. You know this is the first command. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the Beth of Adim. And who, here's another relative clause, picking up on that participle, I think. He is the one who, Asa, did, le'enenu, before our eyes, eth ha'othoth ha'giroloth ha'ela, the signs, the big ones, the these ones, these great signs, and yishmerenu, and he guarded us in all the way which we walked in it, and in all the peoples which we crossed through in their midst. All right, good Hebrew syntax here. 18. And Yahweh garashed in the Peel, drove away eth all the peoples and all the, sorry, and the Amorite, living dweller of the land, from our face. Gam anachnu na'avod eth Yahweh. This is matching up to anoki u beithi. I and my house, we will serve Yahweh. Gam anachnu, also we will serve Yahweh, ki hu Eloheinu, he is our God. We better quit here, it's 10 after, Jeff. And that's the core of the text. Now, by the lectionary, again, if you are going to preach this text, puts in parentheses, you can go on. And it's interesting what happens here, because now Joshua comes back and sort of says, no, you can't. I mean, you'd think he'd say, boy, that's great, guys. And he comes back and he says, no, you can't. You're not going to serve Yahweh. And they say, yes, we can. He says, no, you can't. And they say, yes, we can. And they kind of have this dialogue where I think Joshua was just kind of challenging them to take seriously what they're saying, that this isn't sort of a lighthearted, yeah, I'll get confirmed kind of a testimony. see. But we better go on.